Welcome to Mind Rewilding, Creating Conversations for Change with Eric Chapman and Melissa Ruckmick. We're going to be on this journey with you like an expedition, finding ways to figure out how to speak better to each other. Speak.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's already laughing at me. Okay. You know what?
Okay, well, wait. What is this? So what is this podcast? What are you trying to describe to the people here when they're listening to this pilot to understand what we're talking about when you say mind rewilding and creating conversations for change?
Yeah, good question. Well, over years and years of looking at what's going on with communication and how we talk to each other, whether it's in documentary film or whether it's me researching and trying to figure out how to speak more eloquently, but also to bring ideas across to each other better, I realized that there's sort of this fundamental through line with humans that we all really desire and really, really hope to be heard. And through that, there comes a plethora of things from our personal lives to world politics that has to do with how we speak to each other, intonation, the belief systems around words that we use. It gets a little complicated, but what's really fascinating about it is as we're going to unpack it, all of that on this podcast with many, many different people that are in those different fields of how to better bring across an idea and really help each other feel like we're heard. That's going to be the exciting part. We're really going to look at that.
You mentioned in your career and what you do and things like that, what are some things that you've noticed through your experience and your teachings and your learnings that is like maybe an overarching issue that people have when it comes to communication and something that we can maybe focus on?
Well, I mean, there's a huge amount of miscommunication. Huge.
Miscommunication. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Huge. And it comes from everywhere from, you know, whether we're trying to talk to a friend, to a partner, to basically like really intense situations. Like some of the people that I did research with are now doing negotiations like with, you know, really serious, huge, big things like what's going on in Gaza. And the miscommunication that happens with people, there are very finite reasons for why that happens. And there's a lot of things that I've studied and people like me study that we aren't going to go into on this podcast because it would bore people and they'd go to sleep. It's like reading my thesis. But what we are going to do is bring the tools from all of that work and from a lot of other people's work to people so that they will figure out how to better explain what they're trying to say so that they do feel really heard. And, you know, when it's an intimate thing between our like our family members, for instance, like when I was down with my 90-year-old mom, who is starting to lose her memory a bit. And so having a heartfelt discussion with somebody who's 90 years old, and that's a whole avenue that we'll go down in another podcast around how we deal with aging and how messed up we are with how we are not set up in these countries around, you know, the ability to take care of people who are aging. And so that talking to somebody who is going through that and is starting to lose some of their memory is a very, very finite and graceful thing. And it took, you know, some real work and learning on my part because it's not an area of my expertise. So that's an example. You don't, for instance, with older people, you can't, who are losing their memory like that, you can't just come in and sort of lay everything on them. You know, you have to be slow and concise, and you sort of have to flow with a pattern with them for how you have these discussions, right? Whether it's about, you know, funeral arrangements or whatever it is, you know, or the death doula that I was telling you about that, you know, in my family.
That's a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to talk about that. That's a whole thing. I'm fascinated by that.
We'll talk a lot about that. There's some really cool people doing a lot of work. And so those are the more difficult conversations, you know, and so it really, there's sort of this plethora of tools that, so from your easier conversations with your partner and with people in your world, to business situations where maybe you're negotiating for a contract, something like that. So there's a whole series of ways that we can communicate with people like that, that we can speak to them so that we know not only are we being heard really clearly, but we also, if there's something that goes wrong, if something goes sideways, in as you're midstream, when you get really good at this with the tools we're going to be giving people, you can actually reset yourself.
Are you talking about like when you screw up really bad in your relationship and then you're getting in trouble for it and then you realize that you screwed up really bad, right? And you're like, oh, and you immediately go into fight or flight. Like, are you talking about actually being able to calm that down and not wanting to run or cry in a corner?
Absolutely. Because, you know, a lot of what I realized was that people were going and searching. They're really searching for ways to be able to not create conflict in their lives.
Yeah, people are afraid of conflict. I love it.
Yeah, conflict, it's really uncomfortable. And so what you're talking about is sort of on the fly, being able to negotiate or walk through, you know, something with somebody as you're doing it. And that comes after we sort of get the tools of how to communicate really clearly. And it also has a lot to do, Eric, with what I call going to your heart first. And this is deep work. And I know that the people that do it can do it, and they practice it, can do it on the fly eventually. But it takes, you know, a few months of practice, if not a little bit more.
Okay,
you know, maybe
a few months. Okay, I thought you were going to say, I'm thinking like Buddhist monks, Zen, 20 years. You know, that I'm like, I don't have 20 years.
Not for you or me. Maybe it took us.
Yeah, right? Okay, the average person, a normal person, can do it in a couple months to a year. Okay, like, that's pretty reasonable. That means you're starting to see progress right away then. So that's helpful when you're doing stuff like that.
Absolutely. I mean, the people I've worked with, even when I'm giving talks and I'm having people practice in real time with me, I can see them shift within that 30 minutes or that hour. And the real trick is they need to practice it. It's like everything else, right? If you do yoga one day and then don't do it for the rest of your life, it's
right,
you
like
know,
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done it once.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
and I'm not going to do it again. And it didn't help me, but because I didn't do it anymore.
Or meditation, which is one thing we're going to really dive deep into. And I really wanted to get to in this pilot to talk about, because it really is the first thing. And when people hear that at first, they tend to cringe because they sort of visualize, I think, still somebody sort of sitting on a mat.
Yes.
They're totally quiet.
Yes.
And most people I know with really busy brains are like, oh, yeah, I can't do that.
I wonder maybe if you wanted to get into that, then start with how broad is the term meditation? Like, what can it be from in depth to like not in depth, but it's still in depth?
Totally. And what I've found working with people over a number of years here now and watching what they're doing and having conversations, and also myself, I've been meditating for a very long time, but there are days when I'm just way too active to sit and do a seated meditation. I will say that I do believe that is a way to go extremely deep, but there's also other ways. You know, people do carpentry, people do forms of art, and they tell me, listen, I go into that zone. People who run distances or swim, athletic stuff, when they go into that zone, that is a form of meditation. So listen, people, all I would say about it, I'm not a meditation guru, but I will say from everything I've seen, there are so many ways for people to be able to calm their minds. And that's really what we're talking about, is calming our minds so that our body can kind of be in sync, so that it's not, our minds aren't taking over. And that's really what this podcast is about, because our mind isn't the only thing I want us to rewild. I want us to rewild our being. I realized over the years of working with Buddhist monks and all kinds of people that have really worked, and they've been around what happens with our minds. You know, they've been had electrodes put on them and they've been researched. And we know that if unless we calm our minds, our ability to shift and switch up how we say things and how we do things in life, and so hence change our lives to be better, is really just not possible. We have to be able to calm ourselves, you know, so that we can make those shifts. So we actually know what shifts we have to make.
What does communication have to do with you? It doesn't sound like there's a link at all to there, to the same thing. Like, you're talking about calming your mind, but how does communication help me calm my mind?
Yeah, it's huge. Well, think about all the thoughts you have in your head every day. We were just talking about it. And you said to me, I feel sorry for you. You know, because I was like, oh my God, my mind, I'm just, you know, like I'm just moving a million miles an hour. Well, that's what started this when I was a teenager, right? I had a very, very mind that was just moving along, and I needed to figure out how to calm it down, you know, and so communication comes into it, because that's the first key, is the link is our own communication with ourselves. So it's getting the monkey off our back. And we have to be able to do that so that we can actually go to the place where our whole system is open to different ways of being, you know, different ways of talking to people. You know, this is why people that I work around and who are in the judicial system, who are doing, you know, work over in trauma situations overseas, these people are negotiating really huge situations. That's why they all have ways that they can calm their mind.
If we like monkeys and it's nice and comfy and we want to stay with it, I'm scared.
You know what? I like monkeys too. And sometimes it's kind of fun having that monkey on our back, you know, so to speak, because our mind is just, you know, like everything's just kind of crazy. But I think the thing is that in this world right now where we're living, I mean, yeah, at times it's fun. But when you really look at it, you know, it's like, for instance, let's go back to when you were talking about when a couple has trouble.
Okay.
You guys are often couples right now, they're both working. If they have kids, there's all that. And they're trying to deal with the dynamics of a family. And this is why, you know, even when I was getting my hair done once, I was in Boulder, which is where I did my part of my
Colorado.
And I was getting my hair done, and there was like this 25-year-old gal, and she was listening to what I was saying to the hairstylist. And she said, okay. Like, we need you to start talking to us about this, about how to communicate together, because I see so many young people and, you know, the last thing people need, whether they're in whatever age they are,
when your toe touches the table, it wiggles the mics.
Oh, okay.
And when it wiggles the mics, it makes a noise.
Like, okay.
That's fine.
So,
or we could just keep it in, and I could explain that I just pointed at Melissa's toe in the middle of her thing, so she'd stop moving it because it's on the table where the mics are.
I'm looking at Eric like, why are you making that?
And that
sign to me. Yeah. Yeah, you should keep it in. It's funny. But anyway, so I was in this and getting my hair done in it, and she was just like, we need some help with that. And I said, what do you need help with? And she said, because we have all these things going on in our life, and we're trying to keep these jobs down, and the pace of the world right now is so intense. And so our communication, the way we speak to each other, just often goes off the rails. And
like flippant, like just kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't have time.
Yeah. Here, why am I even answering you? I'm in such a rush, sort of thing.
So, you know, like you were giving me example yesterday on the phone about a couple situation. Do you remember what you were saying about how couples, like sometimes you guys need time out? All of us do.
Yeah. So in my world of relationships, which I've had many relationships, I've had 10-year long relationships, I've had one night relationships, I've had 6 months,
what?
3 years. I know, right? Oh my God. And I found that over time, there's been a couple of things that have really helped. And more recently in a relationship, I'll start with this one, was actually just talking about communication. It just popped into my head, is consent. And because I was with a woman who was recently sexually assaulted within a year that we got together. And so during that time I was with her, I learned a lot about consent. How do you make consent sexy? How do you make consent fair? All these things that surround, because we just think of consent as, you know, are you okay with this?
Totally. Because you don't want to stop in an intimate situation and go, hey, so can we talk
about
this?
Exactly. I mean, are you comfortable?
Like
right? Exactly. So
that
there,
will be like
there
the
are
end
ways
of
that you can say it and communicate it in a way where it's not, you know, put your teacher's hat on and explain what consent is. You know, I can't give an example off the top, but it's a way that you can say it that just kind of flows into the conversation. And so I've found that incredibly helpful. And during that exploration of consent, I learned about giving space when I'm communicating. So oftentimes when you get real heated, I'm a big
heated
guy.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a bad way. In a negative, angry, aggressive way. And I'm a huge human. I'm not a huge human, but I'm 6'3". I'm 200 pounds. I talk with my – I'm flailing my hands right now as I talk.
Yes, you are.
I have a big, booming voice. And even when I speak in a louder voice because I'm a professional speaker, I don't notice that I'm being – I'm loud and I'm big. And I forget that.
Okay.
And so and when it comes to – when I'm at that point in my conversations or communicating, there's no communication anymore. It's just fight or flight. I'm here to do this. And so I've found that space. And so in the past with partners, I've been like, hey, we need to come to this agreement. When I say 10 minutes and we're in an argument, that's it. The hammer is dropped. Or if you say it too, whatever your thing is, when 10 minutes is said, no one can say anything else. Don't care how mad we are. We have to walk away and we have to give it 10 minutes.
Right.
And then when we come back, you can yell at me for taking 10 minutes when you were just about to come with your punchline and get me good, whatever. But when I say 10 minutes or you say 10, that's it. There's no questioning it and we walk away. And I found it very helpful because in 30 seconds of that 10 minutes, you're like, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, you realize, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, I did that. But she did that. But that's okay because I triggered her. Duh, duh, duh. Yeah. So yeah, the 10 minutes and the space creates that lack of communication creates communication.
Right.
Yeah.
Those are really important guidelines. Mm-hmm. And what comes to me when you're talking about that is that it's the guidelines that we have with each other, whether it's in a sensual moment or it's having an argument. Having those that ability, and this is where I sort of fly right under psychotherapy and why often, like when I do work with people privately, it's often in tandem with psychotherapists because there's my first part of my, you know, training was in psychotherapy, so that we do understand that the communication with each other has to be have, you know, some sort of understanding. So it's a perfect example. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And I would say one of the biggest tools I've found with couples that immediately will help anybody on this that's listening to this podcast if they're having some grating situations, you know, if they're just feeling they're not connecting with their partner, is to find a quiet time, you know, agreed upon quiet time where the kids are either asleep or if you have children, if they're, you know, just find some space for yourselves for about 45 minutes and sit back to back. So you sit back to back. And the reason why you do this is so that you're not looking at each other. There's not the intimidation. So this is where communication comes into nonverbal communication, which is a whole nother platform that we'll be talking about. But it's fascinating how much happens without even words that is true. It's communicating. So when you're sitting back to back, you're actually connecting your hearts, which I feel is very important energetically for communication.
How is my heart connecting with my back? Isn't it at the front of my chest?
It's actually in the middle to the left.
Okay. Okay.
I'm also a medic. So Eric knows this. You. I'm like, I can tell you exactly where it is. If you drop down, I could do CPR, but please don't ever
do
that.
Me too.
Okay, good. But it's, you know, it's more of an energetic thing. Our hearts are really, you know, from the work I've done with people, whether it's down in the Amazon, you know, shamans and medicine people, I've always been reminded that our heart and our gut is really like the center of our world, right? In so many ways. Our brain is important too, but the heart, what I've found in my work is that if I can teach people, this is what I've been doing, to speak from the heart, and even in business situations, if they can go to their heart into that sort of mindful, grateful place, you know, before they speak, then there's a whole different tone to their voice. So when you go back to back with a partner, what happens is you're taking away the peripheral, like the eye rolling. I mean, you try not to do any, you know what I mean? We all do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're trying to sort of connect in a way that is going to take that stuff away for a while. And you just stay silent for about 15 minutes. And then there is sort of a grouping of questions to ask each other. And we'll go into it when we do a specific podcast on couples. But it's a way to sort of bring down the energy and reconnect a couple. And like I said in my pitch, you know, the magic that happens when people can do that, and I know people can do it, it's just a matter of sort of helping them how to get there. So
how do you get, so me, can you take your foot off the thing again? So me, how do you get me to get involved in something like this? Because I am very cynical, I'm very scientific, and when you start saying things like heart and connection, I'm like, that's corny, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But deep down and inside, I understand what you're saying, and I know what you're saying.
Right.
So how would you communicate to a person with that mindset, like, to participate in what you're suggesting right now? Is there a process for that, or is just the love of the couple usually gets them to do it? Do you know what I mean?
I think I know what you mean. I mean, it's interesting because I've worked around and with, you know, athletes, all kinds of people. And some of them, well, I'll give you an example. I was working with somebody who had to do with, you know, the administration in the United States with the medical side of trying to set up Obama's healthcare plan. He was very, very left brain doctor from an emergency room setting. And when I started working with him around some of this, and at that point, it had to also do with some of the physical, he had been hurt physically, he had been in an accident. But what was amazing is that after a couple of times of working with him, he started to realize that there was this connection, right? That it wasn't just a physical thing. And I think people, when they actually experience something. So if somebody is very reticent for something like that, then it's important for them to actually just experience it.
Right.
And so it's taking a bit of a leap of faith, you know, that or however you want to speak about it, you know, it's just giving it a try. But I think humor is a huge part of it. If you look at a couple and you go, okay, so we're going to do this, and you're being very, you know, very sort of, I don't know, dry about it. But I give them examples of couples and people that have done this type of work, you know, and the connection part. And look, how many people other than you have been doing a lot of yoga, and they, you know, in the last 15 years, they've really learned about these things. Eric, where have you been?
What are you talking about? My mind-body connection is outstanding. Gosh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, okay. No, that's a good connection, though, because people can relate that to, you know, yoga, sports, it's all this, like, it's physical activity.
Well, that's
like, we're focusing in on yoga, but like, go play hockey. Tell me it's not very similar in many
ways.
Or,
you know, even like when I go up to give talks, we were just talking about this, like feeling fearful, right, about doing something, whether you're doing some kind of sports, you know, competition, or whether you're going and giving a talk, you know, there are people, most people have a lot of trouble with that stuff. So it's bringing yourself down energetically and sort of relaxing yourself. And so really all that is with a couple is doing sort of that together so that they're not feeding off each other. You know what I mean? If a couple's looking at each other and their eyes are rolling and they're, you know, they're doing all the body language, they're, oh, you know, they're, you know, or what you just did.
Oh, God. I'm so annoyed even thinking about this. Yes.
He's looking at me, giving me this funny look. You know, then that's the body language. That is just as important. And that will set people off, and then they're done, right? So this is just taking that away for a little bit.
Okay. Interesting.
So it's fascinating, you know. So when they have the ability to just sort of take themselves into that place where they're not. So the first thing is to quiet your mind, right? No matter what. So you're kind of quieting your minds together when you're doing this as a couple. And then it's about getting curious, right? What is it I want to shift in my life? What don't I want in my life? And let me tell you, this can span from from what you want to be doing during the day, and how you want to be thinking about things, to how you're perceiving the world. Listen, if an older person, for instance, is just an example, is sitting there with the news on 24/7, what do you think is happening to their mind and to their conversation? Oh, you know,
it's rotting.
It's horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And all you have to do is go into an elderly care center and see. And so part of this is realizing what's coming in, right? Because what's coming in is what's going to be regurgitated in our own communication with ourselves. Whether it's what we're thinking about that day, whether it's the monkey on our back, or whether it's what we're dreaming at night. That's why people that work with me have to shut down their equipment. I'm not always perfect at this.
Stop. You're perfect at everything, I'm sure.
I'm totally not. There are times when I sit there and I'm scrolling. I'm like, get off of Instagram. Okay?
Oh, do you ever like, are you
get off?
Are you ever like on it and you like, and you're crippled trying, and then I'm just like, no! And I'll throw it at my pillow. I'm like, oh, get away.
Put it down.
But
walk
then I'll
away.
Like, next thing you know, I'm like, I'm looking at it again. And I'm like, oh my God. And I hate it too, because it's like, this makes me think of like neuroplasticity and changing the way, like, I'm in this groove and I can feel it. I feel like sometimes I can feel my brain creating a deeper groove.
It is creating a deeper groove.
Oh yeah, tell me this groove is deep. And at times, and because of that, when I put my phone down and when I'm looking at it and I acknowledge that whatever the chemical is being released, I'm like, oh shit, that feels addiction to me. And I put it down. I can feel again. I'm like, oh, yo, that's a new pathway there. I put it down. You know, I'm getting stimulus somewhere else. So yeah, it's very interesting how that affects us. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can feel it. You know, when I started noticing that more after I did some ceremonial work. And I started feeling like when things were happening like that, it was amazing. It was like, God, I am just feeling this in my brain right now, that I am so attached to this device. So I think the sense of humor is huge, you know, so not to be too hard on ourselves. Again, that's that internal communication, to just say, hey, you know, you need to step away from this right now for a while. So, yeah, I think when people have more control over their technology. So a big part of this is doing that, not just listening to news at any time of the day. I suggest people don't listen to the news unless it's like a tsunami that's coming their way.
Oh, but it's so
until
informative.
The afternoon.
How do I not know the news? I want you to know what's happening.
Okay, Eric, we come from media backgrounds.
Yes.
How informative. First of all, we know they're on reels, right?
Yeah,
so
they're
it's the same reel unless there is an emergency over and over and over.
Yeah.
So you're like brainwashing yourself.
I know, but I just feel this need to be involved, and like, I want to know. And I guess it's probably ego, because I want to save the world a little bit of it. But yeah, I have a hard time letting go of not of that stuff, like everybody else does. But we all have the same.
So what you just mentioned is huge. So the people who are changing the world right now for the better are people like that. They are people who are very empathetic, and they see what's happening in the world. So that's why we have to regulate it. Because if we see too much, because listen, okay, let's go back even 50 years ago. I mean, we didn't know what was happening around the world, right? We couldn't just switch something on and know everything that's happening around the world, mostly that's horrific. I mean, I think they're really working at trying to get it better, you know, about what's happening, you know, talking about the good stories. But if you look at it, it's like the way I try to look at it myself is like, yes, okay, there are some things I really want to know about. So I look into them, but I don't sit there and like watch, you know, a news station over and over and over. There's a difference.
Right. I guess that's why I'm conflicted by this, because that's the way I do it too. I don't sit in front of the news and watch the full thing. And I don't watch death videos. I don't watch recently that young airman took his life in the news. Like, I don't watch that stuff. I read about it and I know what's happening.
Okay, but this is
but
where
you know
the
what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean, but this is where the internal communication is okay. It's like, if I'm curious about that, then maybe I ask myself why. Like, what is it that intrigues me about this, right? And it's not like you have to psychoanalyze it, but it's okay to go down some of those holes as long as you're not traveling down it for long periods of time.
Right,
this is why people like Gabor Mate are trying to get people to get their kids not to be on technology at all for a certain period of time. I think he said till 7 or something. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, interesting.
Because it is what happens neurologically, and we'll talk to somebody about this. It's fascinating. My grandfather is still being cited about the very beginning research around this, which is super cool, around what happens when we watch stuff, right? And how our brains, how those neural pathways can be shifted and changed. And what's really cool is we know if we shift how we talk to ourselves and how we talk to other people, our neural pathways change.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually can do it. And again, it comes back to that full circle of practicing,
right?
Like, I know, I mean, not all my neural pathways are probably changed for the better. I mean, everyone's got stuff they're working on, Eric.
Yeah.
But
amount of LSD I did as a child keeps
might not
I don't know where they're firing or where they're going, but yeah. But no, I think that's important too, because again, I'm interested in getting more people to listen to this and understand what you're trying to talk about. And for me, again, I'm not spiritual.
Right.
In the slightest. And so when you talk science, that's why I like this conversation. I think it's so fascinating what you're talking about, because this brings, you know, that whole thing in. And it's like, when it comes to neuroplasticity and all that stuff, like, oh, it's good stuff.
Well, that was a big reason why I ended up going back and studying this, because I also am from a scientific family, as you know. Mm-hmm. And so I have to see that there's like I have to see the science.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
When I talk about things, and I've really experienced a lot of unusual things, but I always have that scientific mind, right? Is this, and so when I'm going through it, like, for instance, I went and laid on a light table the other day to see if it would help my mom with her memory.
Okay.
And I'm laying there and I'm like,
oh man.
You know, and I'm like, okay, and I'm trying to be very scientific, right? Like, do I feel anything that's happening? Like, and they're like, well, it takes about 3 times, but I did, right? So I actually was like, oh, this might help her. So, you know, the conversation went further with her doctor, who's fortunately very open-minded, and he actually loves this stuff. He's like, we need to be preventative about aging. Yes, we do. You know, instead of waiting until people lose, you know, their capacity, or things like Alzheimer's is so sad for people. Like you were saying, your friend walked her parents through that. So I think being preventative is a huge part of this around what we're going to try to get at. It's like, here are tools where you can start to perceive the world in ways that will totally make you happier, right? And I don't like usually using that word, but just a life
happier. Why?
Well, again, when you study words and communication, you start to realize that every single human has certain belief systems and patterns attached to every word they use. This is why, like the other day, for instance, I was listening to this podcast, really interesting guy. He just came out with this book, and he was using a word. What was the word? Because I use the word thrive when I'm talking about really when I'm in my zone, right? And getting people in a zone where they're, you know, the days aren't perfect. Maybe their life's not perfect. No life is perfect. But that they can feel like they're thriving most days, right?
Yeah.
And the thrival aspect is where most of us are, and we're working towards thriving. So we're surviving and thriving. But when it comes, and he used the word flourishing, and I was like, well, to me, it's not quite the big picture, right? Mm-hmm. Thriving for me is more of what it's about. And I think...
Yeah, flourishing can be intermittent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead. Yep.
Well, what I was saying was that, I mean, the important thing is that all these belief systems and biases, and I mean, they just beat us up about this when I was studying this. Beat us up. Because they were like, how many people in here have bias or about something? And no one put their hand up, right? Because we're like, oh, we're open-minded. We don't have any biases or judgment. Well, hello. after a week of that professor, I'm like, all of us felt like we had to go and get therapy because it was, I mean, it was like, we are so screwed up. We have so many biases. And now when I walk down the street, I catch myself with it, right? Because I'm listening to my internal thought process, which is what I do with people in the beginning of when I work with them. And it's weird because most people don't listen. So if you listen to yourself as you're walking down the street, it is going to sound messed up. It'll be like, oh, look at that person, you know, they do this and look at that and that's so dirty or, you know.
Ew.
So, I mean, what we found is that, you know, our brain tends because it's easier to go towards the negative. So the neuroscience behind this is really interesting. That's why a lot of our process, our internal communication is kind of negative. So when we start switch that around, it starts to help our lives. It's the most basic way I can explain it.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Can we go to both?
Yeah. What do you mean both? What it
negative
is for...
and?
Oh yeah.
Like, is there a, like we can? Because for me, like, in, I'm going on a second date with this girl on Saturday.
Date number two.
I had this pointed out to me the other day that I have a type, blonde actresses. I'm very Rod Stewart in my women, I guess, apparently, but I never realized. But then it's not true, just recently. Anyways, so I let them know at the beginning that I'm very judgy.
Yeah.
But when I'm judging, I'm mostly judging myself. These judgments come from the internal. So when I make fun of this person, not for like a disability, but, you know, just general, just their general look, just what they wear. I like to get into things.
I hope they get into things with you too. And if so you're gonna be that way.
And so I and yes, please yes,
I
judge
just did
me.
A...
And that's fine too. You just did a what the hand motion, the shut up hand motion. But you can judge
it wasn't
me.
Really shut up.
All
it was
you
more
want.
Like it's more like woo.
Right, but like I can accept the judgment. But yeah. I'm just wondering, like, so like what I'm trying to say is like I find that open and honesty about the judginess helpful in the communication because we're on constantly judging ourselves, so
but
it's one of the first things I'll bring it
okay,
up.
How many people do you know that say, especially like on a first or second date, like I can be judgmental? How many people are that clear and truthful?
Honestly, I thought everybody did
They don't.
No, okay.
I've been on a lot of dates. Anyway, so
okay,
I'm just saying that is not something most people feel brave enough to do. Okay. It's a brave thing to do to say, I'm somewhat judgmental. So if I offend you, let me know, because this is key, right? This is exactly how our world can get turned sideways on a dime. Because say you're on a date and you get judgy without telling her, you know, the person, and they're like, well, F you.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's exactly why I do it, because I could look like human garbage very quickly.
But see, the fact that you're stating, and this is one of the first things about communication, interpersonal communication, we have to be brave enough and calm enough to actually say the truth, our truth, right? I'm shy. I'm judgmental. You know, you might see this with me. Just bear with me, you know, because in this day and age when everything is so fast paced, we just tend. That's why slowing it down. And that's why when we first get to know somebody, it's nice to have places to go where we can have it at a slower pace so that we can actually see what's happening. Right. We have the ability to feel safe enough and calm enough to say those things. That's brilliant. It isn't common for people to do that.
Okay. I do have a superpower called diagnosed, too. I have tendencies. I am diagnosed dyslexic.
Yeah.
And so I don't have that. I don't think of that. I think that when I think I'm lacking in what I'm doing, and I'm not doing enough when I'm communicating, because I think everybody does this.
Listen,
it's not a
strange
thing.
You're a million miles ahead and you don't even know it, because I can tell you after dating for quite a while that, you know, it is very rare for people. It's not rare, but it's unusual for people to feel confident enough in themselves to be able to say those things to somebody, especially if you don't really know them, right? And that's exactly what we're going to be doing when we do couples stuff on this podcast,
I'll
know,
be,
and
I'll be an
and
expert
talking,
at that stuff,
you can just take over. Because trust me, there are times when I know nothing.
Well, you'll
and I'm very clear about that with myself.
You'll realize very quick that I know everything.
Oh,
and
really?
I have the answers. No, I'm kidding. I know
Dr.
nothing.
Eric.
I'm very curious. I'm very curious, and I do not have much of an ego, and I don't think I know a lot.
Yeah.
But I know stuff, but I'm not crazy smart.
Listen, I tell people this. The only reason I went back to university and did all that research was because I needed to find some keys for what I was going to be doing on my path. But I could have, you know, at some other time in some other universe, maybe I would have found those keys somewhere else. I know people who haven't even finished high school who are so much more wise, you know, than people who are like, oh, I have a PhD.
Oh, I hate it. It's so annoying. Yes. I feel you, though.
Like,
yeah.
You know, so I am going to really bow down to that right now in this pilot because I need people to know. And every single person who comes on this podcast, I don't care how many degrees they have, the ones that we talk to are going to tell you exactly the same thing. You know, they went and did what they did because they needed to figure something out, but it's not something that makes them smart, you know. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make you smart, and it doesn't make you wise. Look at the difference between those two words, smart and wise. Huge, vast difference. And when we start to really think about the associations we link to words and how we use them, that's where this gets really fun. Right. And this is where it can be fun, too. It's not all, you know, tough work. It's actually you can laugh at yourself a lot more when you start to realize what you're saying to yourself and the biases and judgments you have. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that happened when I was in a mediation conference here with a bunch of lawyers that we were talking to. And this female lawyer came up to me afterwards and she said, will you please always say what you said in this conference to everyone you talk to? And so I'll say it right now. We're all the same in the way that we all have these challenges. We all have minds and we all have challenges with how we communicate and speak to each other. So what we're going to be doing is helping all of you, as we help ourselves, learn how to flow more easily with our conversations and internally with ourselves, to be able to care, be more caring with ourselves and more helpful with ourselves in our own self-talk, but also how we're speaking to other people, you know, so that we don't get into those situations that we all do. As much as we do, where we're like, oh, wow, okay, I probably shouldn't have said that. Or watching that person's face, you know, when you say something.
Oh,
I mean, tell me the last
time. I
get that
tattooed on my forehead.
Right?
I'm sorry. I can't believe I just said that. I'm sorry. That's when I run into people, too. When I run into them because I was on the radio, they're like, oh, you're Eric Chapman. I'm like, that depends. What did
I
say?
Where do I know you
from? Are you a fan or do you want to like throw me off the Lions gate here? Like what's going on?
Yeah.
So if people want to get, because I think that's a big part of this, because we could, like we're amazing people with crazy stories and probably the coolest people you'll ever meet. But if other people want to get involved, because I think a lot of people are going to want to share stories. So we've created an email address.
That's right.
Where you can share your stories with us and we can, you know, anonymous if you like, just please let us know in there. If you want it anonymous, we'll keep it anonymous.
Yep.
But if you want, if we can share, we'd love to share stories and share your experiences.
Yeah, we would love that. And it's called mindrewildingquestions@gmail.com. So mindrewildingquestions@gmail.com. mindrewildingquestions@gmail.com. And by the way, you know, I mean, if there's stories, we're really wanting you to send in stories that you have and please kind of limit them to, you know, like two or three paragraphs so that we can get to a bunch of people. But we want to know what you've struggled with. Where are your, you know, struggles around communication and interpersonal discussions with people or even in business? Where have you had difficulties? Where have you walked through them? And where have they gotten better? That would be great. And if you have just questions, you can throw them at that email too. That'll be great. And we also want to let you know that one of the first interviews we have coming up, which is super exciting, is with Diane Whelan. She was interviewed by us at a radio station about, 5 years ago. And she had just been starting this 500 Days in the Wild, where she went all across. So she took 6 years and went the entire length of the Trans-Canada Trail. And she has so much to share around what happens when we get out in nature and what happens to how we communicate with each other in communities, different cultures, and her experiences with how she ended up, you know, working with them as far as what was going on in on her expedition. It's fascinating. Her film just came out, and it's going to be streaming on, I believe, Paramount Plus in Canada. So that's really exciting.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a lot of outdoors. 6 years to take. Man, I props. That sounds like hell, but props.
Well, the funny thing is she says that, you know, she wasn't an extreme athlete. She's a cinematographer and a director. And she went on this expedition, and she'll talk about this, but there's so much that shifted with her way of looking at the world. And again, that's, you know, that internal communication with ourselves. And I'm really excited to hear what she has to say and what she has to share with people about why she did it, what she learned. I think she was very surprised about certain cultures being so open to her when she came across them out in the middle of nowhere. Same thing I've experienced with people when we've been filming out in the middle of places like the Amazon. It's just fascinating. She's really interesting person. Yeah. So that's about it. I think that kind of wraps up what we're doing. And Eric is going to put attach our funding site, which we're still actively trying to get funds in to get this podcast off and running. So please share the podcast and the funding and all of it to anyone that you can. We really appreciate all of you very much. And we're really excited to create this relationship with everybody out there and hear what you have to say. We want to know those stories.
Let's get rewild.
Let's get rewild. Let's rewild our mind.
I'm down.
Our being.
All right, let's go.
Okay.
Okay.
We're off.
Let's do it.